Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
That you control. If you'd like to call in and get in on this conversation or bring up a whole new subject, you can call 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. We're going to jump right into the phones. We have Sarah from New Mexico, our regular everyday caller, Sarah. What's on your mind?
Yes, I just want to bring up that... Remember I was talking about that, the panhandlers on the 2 feet, like really narrow, medians that they're, standing on? Well, the city is blaming them for getting killed by cars. They're the cause of our high pedestrian fatality rate.
Panhandlers?
So, yeah, because they have to stand on a 4 feet or wider sidewalk.
Are they in the way?
Yeah, so they're not going to be in the way. So but I called the mayor and I called the council, my counselor, and I told him, I said, it's so comical and so silly that you're blaming them because all that you know what, you scrape up all of the police report of all the pedestrians that got killed. You'll find that none of them was a panhandler standing in the median. You know,
so you're saying that they don't actually get hit and they're just using this excuse? Oh, I see. You're saying that, like, lots of people get hit by cars in different ways and they're trying to chalk it all up to, oh, it's just those panhandlers standing on the side of the road and that doesn't actually really happen?
That's exactly what I'm saying. They're not giving the data. You know what I mean? Okay. If there's a cause of all the pedestrians, what they're saying, okay, if that's true, every single one of the pedestrians that got killed should have been panhandlers standing in the middle of the street, like they're claiming. Or like at least a high percentage, huh?
But they're talking about them standing in the median, not like right in the middle of the street, correct?
Right. It's a median, but it's very narrow.
Yeah.
It's like almost 2.5 feet narrow.
Well, I mean, they definitely it's not a very safe place to stand because if there's a car accident, I mean, like, that's the first thing that's going to get hit, but...
But it is interesting that Sarah is saying that it's actually not common for these people to get hit and they're just trying to... It does sound like the government's trying to do some kind of shady thing to not have to take credibility for something somewhere else, maybe. Maybe you're onto something, Sarah. Got anything else for us tonight?
Well, I just want to say, they want to take away from, like, 4 cars running a red light on the left turn lane. I have to wait, like, a whole minute for them to run the red light. And then when I stepped out, there was a car turning behind me that wanted to hit me. I was sandwiched from all the 4 cars running a yellow red light and the left turn lane. And the cars wanted to turn as soon as they were done and trying to get me out of the way. You know what? There's a real reason why we have, like, 17 people, pedestrians, killed this year so far.
So it sounds like you were trying to run out on a yellow light into the intersection?
No, there were 4 cars running a red light on the left-hand turn. So that I had the walk signal. I had to wait 4 cars to run the red light before I could step out. And then
I thought you said it was a yellow red light.
No,
Meant to say yellow and then corrected herself and said red.
I mean, look, yeah, I don't know how it is there in Albuquerque, but usually in the places I've lived, when you've got cars that are turning left on a green light and then that goes to red, you typically don't get more than 1 car that is maybe going to kind of pull out into the intersection. The light turns red. They go ahead and use that opportunity to make the turn that they were planning to make. And that's usually the end of it. There's usually not three more cars that then subsequently turn after that on a red. I mean, what you're talking about is like completely unprecedented.
Could be that, bad in happen. New Mexico. I mean, those people are the worst drivers in the entire universe.
So, I mean, it could be. Well, it is possible that it could be a cultural thing where people in New Mexico are like, yep, no, we just don't follow common courtesy or road rules. Rules at all.
If so, we I think all... that's pretty awesome. I mean, hey, there's...
I do kind of see both sides of it, because there are certain things where it's like, yeah, it's not cool to cut people off, and I think, like, yeah, stoplights and stop signs are overall probably a good idea just to keep, like, a flow of traffic.
I'd have a stoplight in my, private road if I owned one. I would just have it, you know, if you look and see that there's no one coming and you go, you don't get in trouble for that.
I mean, and I also feel like most stop signs could be yield signs. If nobody's coming, why am I going to come to a complete stop? Like, so there's certain road rules that don't really make sense, and it could be a case-by-case basis.
Some could totally be thrown out, like the ones by our house.
For sure. We should just rip them out of the ground.
That said, I mean, if there's really four people who are turning after a light goes red, making a left turn on a red light, I mean, that's pretty impressive as far as, like, civil disobedience.
Well, this is Albuquerque, and that's why they're blaming the panhandles standing in the middle doing nothing. You know what I mean? They're the one that's all getting killed by a car. It's the most stupidest thing. I told them off about it.
Who did you tell off?
I told my counselors, Tammy Feeblecorn, about what's going on, and I told them it's comical and it's silly that you're blaming the panhandlers in the media.
You got them on the phone and you told them this, or did you go down to the city council meeting and speak during the public comment?
Well, we have a 311 that takes messages for them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so they never heard it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, but one of them did call me back.
Oh, really? You know what I mean? I'm surprised about that.
Was that on this topic?
Yeah, I talked to my city councilor, assistant, our policy analyst, when I talked to her about it.
Wait. The city councilor's analyst called you, or the city councilor herself called you?
That policy analyst.
Okay, so when you said one of them called me back, you didn't actually mean the city councilor.
I said it all.
Because I was impressed there for a moment that there was an actual government politician who would actually take the time to call a constituent back in
New Mexico, where they probably represent a lot.
Because that would happen here in, I think, New Hampshire. You can actually reach the state reps pretty easily.
Oh, yeah, I've called tons of them, yeah.
A lot of them answer their own phones. Yeah. They don't have secretaries and things like that. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right.
If you're done with her, Bonnie.
Oh, yeah, no, I thought you were the one that was continuing with her. But I know it was just to make fun of her.
Yeah, Sarah was pumping up that she got to speak to a congressional staff member.
There was that time that some kind of a Congress or New Mexico congressperson went out to lunch with her, and we were like, what? How did you do that? It was so weird.
Yeah, I remember that.
I don't know the details.
I don't agree with Sarah on much, but I do appreciate her passion in that show. Because a lot of people just complain about stuff.
Yeah,
but,
she does something about it.
Yeah, she goes out there and she actually, you know, she's trying.
Only problem is she's a busybody.
She's a busybody. She's working for a big government, but she does have that principle, I suppose.
If only she had, you know, like, principles where she
like
would put
ones.
All this, yeah,
oh, her
effort
principle
into
is that, her
not working.
She has a principle, and that's, like you said, not working and not having to lift a finger.
But she is working, though, doing all this stuff. She's just
that's
not
what she would say.
Making
yeah.
money, though.
Yeah, right. She thinks that that's, like, a serious job. Okay, well, I want to continue on with this letter from the American Kratom Association just for a little bit, because I think that there's some really interesting parts in here about... Okay. How dumb it is that the FDA isn't just calling it quits. Like, oh, okay, so actually Kratom is fine. Maybe we should stop going after it. Like, people are being paid with tax dollars to continue to go after a drug that the experts already say is fine.
The biggest thing that we need to remember is it has nothing to do with, like, whether Kratom is safe or not, and it has everything to do with the fact that this is going to be a direct competitor with all of their other star meds that they love using and getting people addicted to. Like, this is just competition for the FDA, and that's why they don't want Kratom to, like, that's why they're doing all of this.
Yep, they're the ones that approve Percocets or whatever, things like that. So, of course they don't want to, they're trying to get rid of some competition. Well, Assistant Secretary of Health Dr. Brett Greerwar, MD, withdrew the FDA's recommendation for scheduling of kratom with the warning that by removing kratom from the marketplace, they would create a significant, quote, significant risk of immediate adverse public health consequences for potentially millions of users of kratom or its components that are scheduled, if it was scheduled as a Schedule 1. There is typos.
Let alone the consequences of then having to put people in prison cells, right? Mm-hmm. So he's talking about the health consequence of all of a sudden making a supply line go away that these people are addicted to in some cases, and then having to deal with the withdrawal symptoms from that addiction. That's the problem number one. Problem number two would be obviously some of them would continue to acquire supply in the black market, and then they put themselves at risk for an arrest.
Says the FDA used the same serious safety concerns they're doing now with this thing against Botanics. Let me go back. What was it? Botanic Tonics?
Yeah, they seized $3 million of their kratom.
The FDA used these same serious safety concerns cited in the current litigation in three separate failed attempts to have kratom classified as a Schedule 1 substance. First one was October 13, 2016, when the Drug Enforcement Administration rejected the FDA petition for scheduling as lacking sufficient evidence required by the CSA, the Controlled Substance Act. August 16, 2018, Assistant Secretary of Health at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Dr. Brett Greerwar, withdrew the FDA's second petition for scheduling it, calling it disappointingly poor evidence and data and an overall failure to consider the public health, because he's the one that said there will be adverse immediate consequences if you make this illegal. And then the last one was December 1st, 2021, the UN Commission on Narcotic Drugs, which is also the UNCND, accepted the report from the Expert Committee on Drug Dependence, comprised of 12 international experts on substance abuse and addiction, who unanimously concluded that there was insufficient evidence to schedule kratom internationally.
So the UN has declined to do anything about it.
Yep.
But the FDA is still pushing forward.
Yep, it says, having failed to make the case to ban kratom on statutory criteria set by Congress, even a lesser standard that is part of the International Drug Scheduling Treaty, of which the U.S. is a party, the FDA is now unfairly abusing the import alert authority granted by the Congress by using it as a tool to create a de facto ban on kratom they cannot justify on the evidence and data required by the CSA. It was never the intent of the Congress for the FDA to use the Import Alert Authority as a self-styled pocket ban on any product, including kratom.
Well, this just goes to show that it doesn't matter what the intent of Congress was, that government bureaucrats will interpret the statutes to mean whatever they want it to mean, just like we've seen with the attack on cryptocurrency, of course, where one bureaucracy says it's a security, another one says it's a commodity, another one says it's money. So it's the same exact thing. They've got this thing Congress authorized them to do, and they're going to go outside of the bounds of what they were originally intending to do, whatever they want to do, which is to ban kratom imports and seize them and potentially, I presume, destroy it at some point once all the court nonsense is done and over with, and then keep doing this until some kratom company is able to spend the money that it takes to hire the lawyers to fight this and potentially take it all the way to whatever court they need to take it up to get it overturned.
I bet the Chevron Doctrine being overturned could definitely help.
What's that?
Them with this. The Chevron Doctrine is a 1984, it was determined by the courts that Chevron won in 1984, and it created a precedent that basically if there's any ambiguity in the law, unelected bureaucrats who are part of these alphabet agencies like the FDA, if there's any ambiguity in the law, these regulatory agencies like the FDA, the FBI, they get to basically decide if they are, they get to make up these regulations themselves.
That's true. They do. I think what you're saying, though, is that this doctrine allows them to go beyond the scope of the authorization of Congress.
Yes, I'm wondering if the Supreme Court getting rid of, overturning the Chevron doctrine is going to help.
Did they do that?
No, they didn't. They're considering doing it soon.
Okay,
and we talked about that a couple weeks ago.
Right.
That's what I brought up. And I wonder if it will help these people in their case against the FDA.
It very well could.
Well, it says the FDA knows the director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse, Nora Volkow, MD, testified on May 17th, 2022, so even more recently, at a hearing on the U.S. Senate Subcommittee on Labor, Health, and Human Services regarding the drug overdose crisis. When asked about overdose prevention strategies, Dr. Volkow stated, quote, "There's also interest in the community to test other products that may serve as harm reduction. For example, the use of kratom, which is sold as a tea, and that contains a drug molecule that has effects that are similar to a dose of buprenorphine, but could be utilized also for decreasing withdrawal or depression."
And we learned that buprenorphine is...
It's like Suboxone or Subutex.
Okay. It says, this is a powerful statement. This powerful statement represents the view of one of the top public health officials in the country. Basically, that's where I'm going to end it here. But
so you've got different government bureaucrats disagreeing about this particular drug.
Yep, and I mean, the ones that are more of an expert on whether or not the drug is dangerous or not say it's not, and the FDA, who has its hands in the pockets of a bunch of companies like that make things like probably buprenorphine.
Mm-hmm. The pharmaceutical industry.
The pharmaceutical industry, they're the ones that want to make kratom go away.
Right, so not even the DEA was willing to say that this drug should be banned.
Right.
Right?
And those people would definitely profit from going after kratom users.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I'm actually surprised that they didn't.
Well, I'm going to go to the phones. Unscreened caller, you are on Free Talk Live.
Hello, this is Mike from California.
Mike, what's up?
Just for the rare time, I want to agree with Sarah that out here in California, yes, there are three or four cars that do like to run the red light after it's turned red.
Yeah, I mean...
Wow.
That's kind of crazy, and that's like what I was saying before. Like, it just must be a cultural thing because no one would ever do that around here.
No, I've
right.
never seen that.
Yeah,
I mean, just wait until the next green light.
I didn't see it
that
in Florida, and I didn't see it here, which is where I've lived.
Yeah,
four is ridiculous. Yeah, I didn't see it in San Antonio, and it's pretty notorious for bad drivers there.
Yeah, our lack of enforcement, I believe, and this is anecdotally, but a lot of the laws here are enforcement is, quote, racist to enforce laws. So they don't want to pull people over because it affects the minorities a lot more.
Maybe that's just something that would happen so quickly it's most likely not going to get caught. And then is the cop going to run into the oncoming traffic to pull them over? I don't know.
Well, plus, if it's only one cop, you can only pull one of the four people over, right?
So. Yeah.
If they keep going, they keep going.
Yeah. I think Nikki and I agreed with you that it's kind of just rude and unsafe to do things like that. It's just...
Yeah.
That Sarah is a busybody and, you know, wants to make, like, we need to have
just pay attention.
Red lights on every single camera to where when somebody is, you know, not committing a crime at all, they still get, surveilled, which should be illegal.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't think people should go to jail for running a red light. You know what I mean?
Oh, my goodness.
Well, thank you for the call, caller. We're going to go to Major Pain in the Butt. You're on Free Talk Live.
Call me in the butt, Bonnie. I forgot to say, wait a minute, I gotta get into Bonnie here.
I'm Bonnie.
And, I was under the impression, I got some serious,
radio.
I got some, yeah, whatever. This is terrible radio?
Usually
your calls when you make the same joke you make all the time that isn't even funny, yeah, it's terrible radio.
Yeah, anyway, so let's go to law then. Let's go to law. So first of all, a cop can pull over multiple cars. All he's got to do is pull by each one, point them to move over and pull them over and keep going to the next one, pull them over, keep going to the next one, pull them over, and none of them
dangerous.
Move. If any, this is how you do it. I'm telling you.
Telling you it sounds dangerous.
Well, whatever. Anyway, that's how you do it, and they can do it. And if anybody leaves, as he's working his way back through the column of cars that he pulled over all at once, then they're fleeing, okay? And next thing.
How are they supposed to know to stay there? I mean, if a cop just points at you and then points to the side of the road and then the cop speeds ahead.
I don't want to waste any radio time on it.
Well, you said something, so I'm asking a question.
You're really good at wasting radio time anyway.
If a cop simply points at you and points at you and, you know, insists that you move over without saying anything to you, what obligation do you have to stay there for any amount of time?
I've never heard of that happening.
Well, try leaving.
I'm not saying they won't come after you and use violence against you, but...
So you just answer it. You answer your own question.
There's no communication there.
All right, well, thanks for your call, David.
He needs some
kratom.
Yeah. He needs something else, I think.
I think he needs some
weed.
That
might hype him up.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I said he needs some weed.
But it doesn't make any sense. I mean, I would be interested to see how a case like that would go, where you weren't told, stay on the side of the road.
Yeah.
Some guy with a siren on points at you and points to the side of the road. Of course, you might think, oh, he just wants me out of his way. Okay, yeah, I'll pull out of his way. Oh, he's not pulling me over. He's going ahead and getting somebody else.
I did something illegal on accident because I was just so confused what I was being asked to do. It might seem obvious to someone else, but it just wasn't obvious to me because I'd never been in this situation. It was in Keene. I was going to turn right onto a street called School Street.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those big fire trucks with all the bells and whistles was coming towards me, and they were just slowing down a lot. And I stopped to see if I should not turn right, like if they were going that way. They stopped, too. There was nobody looking at me to point to tell me stop or anything. I didn't know what was going on. They paused for long enough that I went right. I was like, obviously they're not going right. I don't know why they paused for so long. Mm-hmm. But then they got behind me because they were turning left onto the same street, School Street. And they apparently, I was supposed to know not to turn right. And if they continued going straight, I wasn't going to be in their way. I didn't know what they were waiting for. And so I was behind them, and they were just, like, slamming on their horn, and also...
So they didn't use their directional?
All the lights were going on, so there was no directional thing that I could see. It was just another light if it was there, but I don't think that they have things like that. It's just...
No, like on the car.
What do you mean?
Oh, maybe I'm confused about what was happening.
You know, I'm definitely confused about what was happening.
I thought you were talking about...
They have lights going off all over it.
Yeah.
It doesn't have, like, a turn signal. If it does...
Yeah, because it's already flashing. Okay, I get
what
you mean.
Which thing is the turn signal? So they just stopped. They're facing me, but they're on the other... They're oncoming to me.
Okay.
I would be turning right onto School Street. They would be turning left. They just stopped there. I stopped, too, because there's a thing... flashing at me, but I didn't know if they were waiting. I almost thought I was in their way, so I needed to move away because they paused for so long. They didn't have to pause to make this turn. Mm-hmm. And once I turned, they were like, you know, like, hey, I was going. And they got right behind me.
They were riding
my car's butt and slamming on their brakes. They made a dangerous situation by doing that because if I needed to stop, I was going to get my car crushed.
Mm. Yeah, but, I could totally see how that would be like a very confusing situation where you're like, what is the correct thing to do here?
Right. I even wondered if I was in their way. But yeah, there's lots of times when, how are you supposed to know what a cop is wanting you to do? There's not a text message sitting above their head.
Yeah.
Well, coming back.
I mean, I guess he could pull up a PA system and yell at you, but even then you might not hear it.
Yeah. Well, when we come back, I want to talk about a story that Nikki's brought in about near-death experiences. 603-283-6160. Free Talk Live.
It's all too obvious. We're being let down by the institutions we used to trust. American families are talking about a future of food shortages, banks failing, society breaking down, and what seems like the setup for the apocalypse. But instead of throwing up their hands, folks are leaning into self-reliance, investing in emergency food storage now more than ever. And My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, has made it easier than ever for you to have peace of mind knowing you're prepared. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and stock up on their best-selling 3-month emergency food kit. You get tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one food kit for each family member. For a limited time, save $200 plus get free shipping on 3-month emergency food kits at MyPatriotSupply.com. It's time to prepare for what we all know is coming. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com now. MyPatriotSupply.com.
USA News Update. Wall Street closing with stocks lower Wednesday. This comes as debt ceiling negotiations continue between lawmakers and the White House in Washington. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy said Wednesday the two sides remain at odds. At the closing bell, the Dow lost 255 points. Investors waiting to see how things break. Tina Turner is dead at the age of 83. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre was surprised at the news.
Tina Turner was an icon who had many stages and many amazing moments in her career.
Reports say Turner died in Switzerland peacefully after a long illness Wednesday. She was known as the Queen of Rock and Roll and rose to prominence as the lead singer of the Ike and Tina Turner Review. She left Ike after years of well-documented abuse and launched a successful career as a solo performer. I'm Ryan Daniels, USA News.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who help people that have been injured or wronged. If you've been involved in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or injured at work, you have rights and you may be entitled to money for your suffering. Don't accept an offer you get from an insurance company until you talk to a lawyer. And we represent some of the best personal injury lawyers you can find. Tough lawyers that will fight to win your case. And they're so good they stake their reputation on it by only getting paid if you win. So if you've been in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or hurt on the job, find out today for free what kind of compensation you may be entitled to. Call the legal helpline right now.
800-509-4492. 800-509-4492. 800-509-4492. That's 800-509-4492.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
That you control. If you want to get in on this last segment before the next half hour, call 603-283-6160. 603-283-6160.
There is not going to be another half hour after this.
No, this is the next half hour, is what I meant.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
In this next half hour. Anyways, moving on to a story that Nikki brought in tonight.
Yeah, so this one is from Science Daily. It's called Lucid Dying, Patients Recall Death Experiences During CPR. Detection of rhythmic brainwaves suggestive of near-death experiences. So one in five people who survive CPR resuscitation after cardiac arrest may describe lucid experiences of death that occurred while they were seemingly unconscious and on the brink of death.
I've never heard it called lucid death, and that's a very apt description, actually.
Yeah, it is, because you're still, I mean, you'd think you're still kind of in that limbo state, because maybe this person is, you know, technically, you know, like medically dead.
Yep.
But there is, like, we already know there's so much, like, the DMT that's being released. Like, there's so many functions still going on in the body. I mean, it's not just, like, instantly you're dead, everything turns off.
Yep.
There's still a lot of, even, like, based on, like, MRI scans and stuff, there's a lot going on in the brain specifically, like, right after death. So, led by researchers at NYU Grossman School of Medicine and elsewhere. The study involved 567 men and women whose hearts stopped beating while hospitalized and who received CPR between May 2017 and March 2020 in the United States and the United Kingdom. Despite immediate treatment, fewer than 10% recovered sufficiently to be discharged from the hospital, which is pretty common, unfortunately. Survivors reported having unique lucid experiences, including a perception of separation from the body, so out-of-body experience, observing events without pain or distress, and a meaningful evaluation of life, including of their actions, interactions, and thoughts towards others. The researchers found...
This is what they call a life review?
Yeah, or like, you know, your life flashing before your eyes.
And it's really interesting when people talk about this, because I remember there was a guy who, Garrett Ian, who used to be one of the activists here in the Keene area. He's up in the Concord area now, but he encountered this guy in the State House who was like a test pilot for NASA or the Air Force or something, and they put him in one of these centrifugal force machines that just like test the human body or something like that, and it turned his spine into like jelly over time. This is the best I can recall this particular story, and I guess he had a brush with death in this whole process of having his spine worked on, and he had one of these life reviews. And the interesting thing about it, and he's not the only one who said this, is that when you have the life review, you actually experience your actions from the perspective of the other person.
Wow, meaning that's interesting.
Meaning that if you were a jerk to somebody, and you, that person felt bad about the interaction that you experienced or that person had with you, you would feel how that person felt in that circumstance.
Another interesting thing with these life reviews is often there's another entity there that's talking to you about it.
Yeah, so it kind of, and I've heard of that before, where either, you know, if you're a religious person, you might see like an angel, or maybe you'll see your grandfather, or, you know, like someone that would be comforting, like a comforting presence.
Yeah, I just think that life review is a really interesting phenomena.
It is. So let's see.
It suggests that even though there's not, like, maybe you didn't get quote-unquote karma in your life for something that you did, maybe it comes at the end.
Yeah.
If it didn't happen during your life, maybe you get that happening at the end where you have to feel the sum total of all of the negative things. And I think you also feel the positive things that you did for people, but you get the whole experience from someone else's perspective.
So the researchers found these experiences of death to be different from hallucinations, delusions, illusions, dreams, or CPR-induced consciousness, which I've never heard of that phenomenon before, so I'm not quite sure about that. The work also included tests for hidden brain activity. A key finding was the discovery of spikes of brain activity, including so-called gamma, delta, and theta, alpha, and beta waves, up to an hour into CPR. Some of these brain waves normally occur when people are conscious and performing higher mental functions.
CPR can go on for an hour?
Yeah, isn't that awful? You'd think they would call it quits before them.
Normally, but, like in the movies, it's like, you know, you give them a few pumps, and if they're not there, they're gone, right? Like,
no, I've been part of resuscitations that easily went on for like 45 minutes.
Wow.
Well, think about it. If someone dies and their parents are there saying, you didn't try hard enough, you only did a few pumps. I'm not saying that it's right, but that's...
I think there's like certain hospital protocols too. So you think, I mean, like one resuscitation I was part of, he was like in his 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Like his fingers were blue.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, are we done here yet? Like all of his ribs are broken. Like this is gruesome. God. Like even if we did save him, what quality, he's in his 80s, like what quality of life is he going to have? He has, you know, severe internal organ damage, you know. But I guess it is, you know, kind of like what Bonnie said, like we have to exhaust every single, like that's what, when you don't have a do not resuscitate order, like we have to exhaust every single possible, you know, mode of bringing you back to life. So it can be,
that's grueling.
Absolutely. Some of these brainwaves... Oh, I already said that. So these recalled experiences and brainwave changes may be the first signs of the so-called near-death experience, and we have captured them for the first time in a large study, said Sam Perina, MD, PhD, the lead study investigator, and the intensive care physician, who is also an associate professor in the Department of Medicine, whatever, as well as the organization's director of critical care and resuscitation research. Our results offer evidence that while on the brink of death and in a coma, people undergo a unique inner conscious experience, including awareness without distress. Identifying measurable electrical signs of lucid and heightened brain activity, together with similar stories of recalled death experiences, suggests that the human sense of self and consciousness, much like other biological body functions, may not stop completely around the time of death.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really interesting is that there have been doctors, I can't remember the exact doctors and scientists' names that I'm going to talk about here, but I can tell you, you can read about it in Dr. Melvin Morris's books on the near-death experiences. He has three different books about it. Well, they've tried to find the exact place in the human brain that near-death experiences occur. Like, one exact place. He wants to, they want to isolate that.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't find it. So obviously, these memories, these things that people wake up with,
I think it's pretty obvious that it's
going on in your spiritual reality.
Mm-hmm.
In a spiritual reality that's not actually just, oh, it's a hallucination.
Well,
like, that hallucination would be found in your brain.
Yeah,
like,
there'd be great brain activity.
Yeah.
I think what you're suggesting there, my understanding of what you're saying, is that consciousness is separate from the mind.
The body,
right?
Yeah. I think you go on when you die.
That whatever your experience you're having is not showing up on a... you know, brain scan or whatever it is that they would be using, because it's not happening there. But it's happening to you.
Yeah.
Right? At least these people seem to be pretty sure that it happened to them. I mean, one of the things that Morris, because we've read two of his books.
No, we read three.
I know there's a fourth book that we haven't read.
We have
read,
a fourth one that's not part of the series.
I see. You know, the thing that there's a lot of people that have these experiences and they're very transformative for them, meaning that they come out of this, in a lot of cases, better people, being more compassionate.
Less afraid of death is a huge one.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
They're not afraid to die because they know what's going to happen when they die,
they
and
know
it's nice.
You know, like peaceful and, you know, they know the possibilities after. And it's so interesting that a lot of these people, they report very similar things.
They do, yeah.
Right.
Even across differing, like, belief systems.
Yeah,
so,
like different religions.
Like a Muslim or a Christian or whatever, they all have very similar experiences.
These lucid experiences cannot be considered a trick of a distorted or dying brain, but rather a unique human experience that emerges on the brink death, says Perina. The brain is shutting down and many of its natural braking systems are released, known as disinhibition. This provides access to the depths of a person's consciousness, including stored memories, thoughts from early childhood to death, and other aspects of reality. While no one knows the evolutionary purpose of this phenomenon, it clearly reveals intriguing questions about human consciousness, even at death, says Perina.
Mm-hmm.
I would say nobody knows it because the purpose is probably spiritual.
Yeah, exactly.
Not a physical purpose, probably.
The study authors conclude that although studies to date have not been able to absolutely prove the reality or meaning of the patient's experiences and claims of awareness in relation to death, it has been impossible to disclaim them either.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you can't say either way. They say
you can't tell somebody they didn't have the experience that they say they had.
Yeah.
You can't tell them that.
And,
right?
and then once you have hundreds of people all saying very similar things.
Yeah.
I mean,
and they
so,
didn't have a meeting beforehand to get on the same
page. Exactly. Well,
right?
You have people that speak different languages. They have different religions.
And these are 500 study participants over 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, exactly.
And this has been going on, by the way, for much longer than this. This is just the latest in a long series of studies that have been done on near-death stuff.
And I think that's what's so great about Melvin Morse. his focus isn't why is this happening as much as look at the results that we can see.
Yeah.
That's why his first book is called Transformed by the Light. It's because he, after studying these people for a very long time, since like the 80s, he determined that there was a link between near-death experiences and people improving their lives.
Well, and I think that is really important because we're never going to know the why. Like, well, maybe I'll reach, you know, enlightenment or nirvana, and then maybe I'll think I know.
Hmm.
But that I think the why is maybe not as important as here's the data, here's all the evidence we've collected in these, like, reliable studies, and you make your own decision from that. Because it's more difficult to prove the why, but we can at least share people's experiences and kind of just give people the information to come to their own conclusions on, what is the meaning of life? I don't know. That's a really difficult question to answer, and everyone's going to come to a different conclusion.
And I think that the people who need a why so bad or they just can't even think about this subject, they're just stuck in the five-sense illusion. Oh, my five senses are all that is. And if it doesn't make sense to my eyes, ears, you know, taste, smell, then it doesn't exist. And that's an illusion. Clearly, because there's such thing as infrared. We can't see the infrared colors, but we know they exist.
So some 25 hospitals in the United States and the UK participated in the study called AWARE-2. Only hospitalized patients were enrolled to standardize the CPR and resuscitation methods used after cardiac arrest, as well as the recordings made of the brain activity. Additional testimonies from 126 community survivors of cardiac arrest with self-reported memories were also examined in the study to provide greater understanding of the themes related to the recalled experience of death. Perina says further research is needed to more precisely define biomarkers of what is considered to be clinical consciousness, the human recalled experience of death, and to monitor the long-term psychological effects of resuscitation after cardiac arrest. And that's pretty much it. Yeah, no, it's interesting, and I'm glad. It's nice to hear, like, doctors and scientists kind of taking this stuff more seriously. Because previously this was just like, woo-woo.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're crazy.
You don't even want to talk about it around other professionals because they'll treat you badly.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot that we do see, like, you know, being a healthcare practitioner. Like, there's a lot that doctors see, that nurses see, being around dying people that sometimes you don't want to share with your colleagues because you are afraid of what people are going to think of you. Like, a lot of people don't want to be seen as crazy, especially if they hold, you know, kind of a more prestigious title, like you're a doctor. And a lot of doctors are very left-brained and they're not always open to the spiritual side of things.
Yeah, and there is a fear factor. I know in Melvin Morse's books, he talks about some of these respected doctors coming to him quietly and telling him their stories, but like, oh, you can't say it was me.
Yeah,
you know?
But they're glad to share it with someone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there are some times where like something happens to you and you're not sure if it's real because some of these things just don't seem quite possible.
And lots of people like to finally get told, like, you're not crazy. There are tons of people with similar stories to this. And then it's just really sad to me that there have been people that, you know, lived on this planet and they died in like the 80s and they never talked about like a Bigfoot experience or an alien abduction or a near-death experience because they were afraid that they would get made fun of or not be able to get a job or whatever.
And it's so easy to kind of just black out some of that stuff or like all of that. It wasn't real because of A, B, C, and D, you know, like it's very easy as a defense mechanism to kind of just, you know, rationalize why that wasn't a UFO and why it was a shooting star or whatever. Oh, no, I was just really tired and I must have been hallucinating.
Sure.
You know, it's not impossible.
Well, I'm going to go to the phones. We've got Kadu. Kadu, you're on Free Talk Live.
Yeah, I'm forced to make a confession. I have to get this off my chest. Feel guilty about it.
Go ahead.
I'm jealous of Ian Freeman because Bonnie looks great in that outfit.
Thank you so much. That's very valid.
Very beautiful lady. There's no doubt. Were you calling about something else?
He hung up.
Oh,
so I guess not.
Okay.
Thank you, Kazoo. I appreciate it. I'm going to go now to Saheed. Saheed, you're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Hey,
that was a great conversation, and I love the topic. I called for something else, but there's a great connection with this in the Quran, because there's like this chilling verse that talks about when somebody goes ahead and dies, and they're doing wrong, an angel will take them, they'll take their soul, and basically say, what situation were you in? And then he responds, we were oppressed on earth. And then he asks, was God's earth not wide enough that you couldn't emigrate somewhere, you know? And then it says that those people would be the people who end up in hell, despite them saying that they're oppressed, and that's why they went ahead and did, you know, X and X, you know, just like the Nazis would say, like, I have no choice to go ahead and do this. Basically, they should have went ahead and moved instead to kind of, like, get out of that situation. And that doesn't apply to people who are, you know, too poor to actually go ahead and move and whatnot.
Which, of course, was a lot easier to do in the days that the Quran was imparted than it is now. Now you can't go anywhere without, you know, master's permission.
Yeah, exactly.
COVID?
Or anytime.
That was bad, though.
A lot of people said that they were able to move during COVID, but that was the time that I went ahead and got the hell out. Usually I just, you know, stay at home for the most part, don't go out too much. But during COVID was when I saw everything going on, I was like, you know what, let me go ahead and get the hell out of here. So as things were, you know, if people are looking, then you could, and they had the means to, they could go ahead and leave, you know what I'm saying?
Where did you leave during COVID?
Do you know Derek Rose? Do you guys follow him at all?
I mean, I've met him on occasion at libertarian events over the years, but I can't say
I went down to I went down to Mexico at a certain point. But I actually came back because I went broke on the way. But I decided to go ahead and turn around. It was actually a little kind of scary being in a different place like that. Not scary, but it was weird.
So you went. He's got like a community or whatever that he started down there. Is that what's going on in Mexico?
Yeah.
Is that Puerto Vallarta?
Excuse me?
Is it Puerto Vallarta?
I actually didn't get there. I got all the way to one of the big cities. I forget the name. One of the biggest cities on the near the border, like a couple hours away.
Huh. Okay.
Morelia, maybe?
Morelia? Oh, that's in Michoacan.
Okay.
Michoacan. Okay. Maybe it was a different city.
So you made it to you made it into Mexico, but then ran out of money and you had to turn around?
LRN.FM.
Now, generally, you want to put somebody on hold before you do that, but Saheed's pretty trustworthy. He probably didn't mean to say that.
Back?
You can choose to take somebody back because the dumb machine's ready to go again. So.
Okay, well, Saheed, you said you had some other subject you actually wanted to talk about when you called in, so let's get on to that.
Actually, that was the subject, was about emigrating, because it was about Alu and Mark and your conversation from last time. I think that leaving and moving somewhere that's more free or into the woods or whatever you got to do to kind of, like, get out of the oppression is an important thing to do if you have the ability to, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I do understand going ahead and staying behind to kind of, like, figure out what to do with those who are oppressed.
The thing about
those
Mark,
who are too poor to move.
I think we all agree that if you live in California and you want to live in a more free place, yeah, you should go to New Hampshire. But the thing is, Mark believes that you should just basically, you are responsible and being voluntarily, you are voluntarily committing, or, you know, voluntarily giving your money to the government in the form of taxes or X, Y, and Z, unless you move to a place where none of that's happening. And guess what? There's no place on earth where none of that's happening.
And I think it's just important for us to find, because everybody has different priorities and different things that they need from life and what they consider to be freedom. So, like, that's not going to be the same across the board.
Like, Mark used to be championing the Marianas Islands. They don't allow guns there.
Yeah, like, I wouldn't want to live there. I want to live in New Hampshire.
And he just told us the other day, like, everything that they, you know, their water, their sewage, their things like that, it's paid for by the American taxpayer. So, yeah, you're not paying taxes, but you're also feeding off someone.
Yeah, that's like almost...
Yeah, I think, but I think the most important point is the people who are doing the oppressed thing and not contributing to that. You know, So if you're going to have to give your money to the government while you're in the situation in America, then that's a big deal, like morally. And so if you have the choice to kind of like move away and not be able to feed that system, that is doing so much.
But then you're
going to
be feeding another system. That's my point. Obviously, if there was a everyone could just move to this one place and they wouldn't be feeding any bad system, no one would disagree that that would be the most moral choice.
Well, Mark says you can move into.
But there isn't a place like that.
He says you can move into Morazan.city City in the mainland of Honduras, and you can live in a walled city, pay $120 a month for a little apartment. And
some people literally cannot do that if they don't have the money to do that, for one. And for another thing, I don't want to be in a walled city where the city that is right outside of the wall is the most dangerous place on the earth for women.
And you probably can't have a gun.
There's a lot of crimes going around all around the world. And so, I think that's the whole point of even the concept of hell is that, you know, there's a lot of crimes going on and people have to pay for that after they pass away, you know. And there is some kind of karmic system where it does actually, you know, equal out, you know.
I agree with that.
And, I hope so.
Yeah, I think one of the other biggest parts is the concept of ownership and disputes in ownership. And when you're staying, I mean, because there are places in the world where people will not dispute you being there because they're not even going to know you're there until we have like a complete prison, you know, kind of like control grid where they have satellites going ahead and pinpointing where everybody is at any point in time. Before then, there are places around the world where you can be and not contribute as a kind of like, and nobody's not even going to, most people won't even contest it because most people won't even move there.
That's the type of place that you would have to have these type of skills that a lot of people don't have anymore to
like
be able to
survive. Live off the land.
And the other thing is, it's not even guaranteed. River Dave, some airplanes that are like looking at the forests of New Hampshire to, I don't know, monitor for fires or something like that. They saw that he had his house peacefully there, and they told on him. And then when he wouldn't move, they eventually went and burned down his house. He's just
after arresting him and throwing him in jail, they burned his house down. Yeah, that's true.
Well, thank you for the call, Saheed. And this has been Free Talk Live. If you guys want to call in tomorrow, we're on every day of the week, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. And you can always call 603-283-6160. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. It's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
Airlines have just reduced their prices even more. Book 30 days in advance and save big.
Want the absolute lowest prices on your airline tickets? Then call the low-cost airlines travel hotline right now for prices so low we can't publish them anywhere. The only way to access our low rates and save up to 70% is to call. Save hundreds on your vacation tickets by calling right now. You can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go and pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. That's 802-341-4535.